You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Yeah, to me, it's an instrument that can sound really heavy. Like you can put a lot of energy into it because it all comes from your breath. And if you are really pushing hard, the sound that comes out of the instrument can be pretty intense. And I think that fits metal pretty well. And so I think that's the first reason. And besides that, I think since we are doing like a proggier side of metal, it's been really common basically to try to find new sonorities and stuff like that. And saxophone is just one way to achieve that.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Hope you've been having a glorious week. I most certainly have been. Before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there is someone in your life, someone that you first discovered metal with, first off, you should write them and let them know how much you miss them and how much they mean to you, but you should also let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You could tell them that there are over 300 episodes with some of the world's best metal musicians available on all podcast platforms for them to discover. If you would encourage one of your friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm with Vince Wilke of Fractal Universe. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 333.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm with Vince Wilke of Fractal Universe. Vince, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. What about you?
I'm doing great. It's you know, it's cold. I live in Canada, in Montreal, and it's that time of the year when it gets really cold. But that's okay, because we can still hang out and talk about life, metal, and craft beer, and that makes me very, very happy. Let's jump straight into the meat of things. I like to start off with the shittiest question first. How did you cope with the glorious years of 2020 and 2021, and hopefully not 2022? How did you cope with this beautiful pandemic that just won't go away?
Yeah, we've been trying our best to remain busy. I mean, we released an album in last June, which we recorded during the pandemic and all of that stuff. So I guess we managed to do the best out of it. And also we started a Twitch channel and streamed a little bit over there and have written a couple of new songs already. So yeah, trying to do the best out of things. But what's missing is really tours and more shows, for sure.
Absolutely. That's what we're supposed to be doing. It's a big part of our lives to be able to have the yin and the yang. That's what I loved about my life prior to the pandemic, was I would go on tour and I would love being on tour, and then I would miss being at home, and then I'd come home and then enjoy being at home and then miss being on tour. That yin and yang of my lifestyle is really upside down. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something missing. As you said, it's a big part of our lives, and just the contact with the fans and all of that, and the adrenaline that you get from shows, there's nothing really that can replace that. So
absolutely not. I call that filling the void, yeah, which we'll get to later. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, what are you going to be drinking today that we're going to be sharing virtually?
I'm going to drink a green mint tea for today.
Hell yes. Healthy. Love it. Antioxidants. Good for you. I will not be drinking tea today. I will be drinking a beer, and it's bloody cold, as I mentioned, here in Montreal. So I'm going to be drinking something completely different and completely opposite of that. This is from La Gabière. This is their Tiki Sour Cassis. It has Cassis is currants, black currants. So it's a sour beer with black currants in it. 6% La Gabière make a bunch of very cool beer here in Quebec. And this one is a wacky sour. And they actually sent me a glassware to go with it, and I typically don't do that, but because it's so cold today, I thought it'd be funny to actually use the glass for that someone sends me for it. So I'm going to pour this out, and while I pour this out, I would love to hear about your very first beer. Do you remember the first beer that you ever drank, Vince?
I'm not sure. I think it was like at the show when I was like 12 or something, a show I attended in a nearby village, and we were just, let's try that. It sounds interesting, and I remember I didn't really like it at first. I pretended I did. because yeah, you have to be cool. But I really didn't like the taste at first.
We all tend to do that. Hey, that first, I remember my first beer too, and I remember it taking so long to finish. You know what I mean? Nowadays, it just disappears. But that first beer, you hold it till it gets warm, and then if it's warm, typically we buy shitty beer when we start too. It's not craft beer or like fancy beer such as this one, something that you know has a fruit flavoring to it. As it gets warmer, it tastes even more horrible. So this is a ridiculous glassware that they sent me, which is basically like a. It's like a tiki Hawaiian style face. It's sort of ridiculous, but here we go. Cheers.
And I also brought the last beer I drank since I'm not drinking one
cool.
today.
Oh, cool. Go for it, yeah.
This is a Belgian Abbey Ale, which is pretty strong. It's like 10 degrees, but it was pretty good. I'm usually not a big fan of stronger beers, but this one, I must say, was really tasty. And it was offered to me by a student of mine, so a nice present for Christmas.
I love that. Love those presents and keep them coming, people. We love beer, and it's the best present, honestly. This is tart. It's the black currants are very subtle, just lightly sweet, very smooth. 6% goes down really nice. The color is gorgeous, like a deep red leaning towards the purple. Gorgeous. Lagabiaio, killing it as always. Let's jump into craft beer. At what point did you realize, or did you ever realize, that beer could be more than that first beer that you had at that concert, that beer could be something that can be enjoyable?
I don't know. I think it happened over time. Then I think when you are growing up, beer is more like something for parties and stuff like that. And then it really takes time to learn how to enjoy it. And yeah, I'm not like the biggest specialist on beers and stuff like that, but I still enjoy it for its merits. Like I usually drink IPAs and stuff like that.
Love it. Let's talk about the craft beer scene in France. Has it blown up? You're talking about drinking IPAs, which is something that when I have toured, I guess the last time I went through Europe was in 2019 with Ingested. I don't remember really stumbling onto many craft beers in France. Has it taken off since then?
I wouldn't really be sure about that. I know we have a lot of Belgian ale. I think there are a lot more into that stuff. And since I live very close to the Belgian border, usually it's what you find in shops here. But yeah, I think France might be catching up a little bit on that.
Good. It's spreading like the plague, but it's the plague that we want as opposed to the one that we currently have. I would love to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
A lot of rock music, I think. I grew up listening to bands like Deep Purple, Frank Zappa, Led Zeppelin, stuff like that. And I think that's what got me into music and into the guitar, more specifically. But I remember always having that kind of music in the background.
Very, very interesting. What drove you to the guitar first? What would have been that just hanging out and listening to?
Yeah, because as far as I can remember, I've always pictured myself like with long hair and a guitar in my hands and rocking out. And
I love
it took
that.
Me some time to really get to the practice side of things, but I think that was already at the back of my head somehow.
How old were you when you got the first guitar?
The first real guitar, because I had one before that had like 3 strings and I was just toying around. First one, I think I was 9 when I first had my first acoustic guitar and took my first lesson.
And then lessons right away. And then how strictly did you adhere to a practice schedule? Was it something that was fun for you, something that you did on your own, or was it more of a chore that your parents were like, no, we're paying for these lessons, you have to practice?
I was pretty lazy in the beginning. I must admit that. And my parents didn't want to force me into doing anything. So they just tried to motivate me and like giving me some goals, like you'll be able to play this song and stuff like that. But it took me some time. I think when I was 11 or 12, I really got into practice when I discovered stuff like Metallica and stuff like that. And then I suddenly realized I want to play this song. Okay, I have to work for it.
What would be the band, and is it Metallica? I'm curious if it is, that you brought into the house, that exposed you, your first love that you brought into the house, and all of a sudden you're blasting your parents with your music?
Hard to say, because Metallica, I think, was introduced to me by my uncle, because he listened to a lot of metal bands, also like Dream Theater and stuff like that. But I think the first band I rediscovered by myself, and that changed me as a musician, is Death. I immediately fell in love with it. I've never heard anything like that before. I was mostly listening to heavy or thrash metal. But yeah, I bought a Death CD by accident, actually, because I didn't really know the band. I liked the cover. I decided, yeah, let's give it a try. And
which album was
Usual
it?
Thought Patterns. It's still my favorite one.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing. When you listen to it now, can you reimagine yourself hearing it for those first times?
Yeah, I've pretty... A lot of memories. I remember listening to it a lot on the school bus or on school trips and stuff like that. So I have these memories that come to mind still now.
It's weird, eh? How music can just transpose us immediately back to a period of our life. It's like it's this weird. I have the exact same story, except it's not with Death, but it's with Korn, because I was a nu metal child. There's a specific song at the near the end of the record. I think it's Predictable, it's called. And whenever it starts, I remember leaving. I was in a bad mood for some reason in high school, and I remember leaving. It was winter, and walking out of my high school and just feeling so depressed and listening to that song, and it just resonating with me for some reason. And if I hear it again, like today, right back to that spot. Interesting how music has that power. Now we can just hope that we're giving that gift to someone else with our music.
Because yeah, I remember how strongly I could feel in these moments. And if only one person in the world can feel like that because of my music, that's amazing, I think.
It's we're truly very lucky. Let's talk about your first shows. Do you remember the first show that you went to go see?
Probably there were some prior to that, but I remember seeing Deep Purple when I was 10, Deep Purple again. And yeah, that was my first like big show in a huge venue and stuff like that. And it was absolutely amazing. I still have the poster from that show.
Really? What was that feeling? Did you remember standing there, the smells? That's another thing that we can transpose back to these influential moments. Was there like a moment when you're standing, and again with me it was Korn, they came through with Incubus and Orgy, and I remember just being like, first off, I was terrified because I was a very sheltered child. Here I was alone with my friends from high school at a big show, and nu metal was sort of, people were freaky, it was the oddball people being there, and I remember being scared but very, very excited. Do you remember what your first impressions were at that show?
I think I was pretty excited because yeah, this was one of my favorite bands since long before that, and finally being able to see them live and stuff like that, I just felt excitement. No fear at all, like you mentioned.
Yeah. I was just, you know, like in a mosh pit for the first time, all these things. And I was a very sheltered child, Vince. How about your first time on stage? Do you remember your first time performing?
Yeah, actually it was at a school concert. I was just playing with a friend of mine who played drums, and we prepared like, I think 10-ish songs, ranging from like Green Day to Metallica.
Really?
And yeah, it was pretty cool because that was before that I wasn't I was a very shy child and didn't have a lot of friends. But suddenly people realized, yeah, oh, this guy is a musician. How cool is that? And I got a lot of new friends after that show. So pretty fun memories after that gig.
It's funny how that happens. That everyone wants to be friends with the musician. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, he can come to our camping trip and play guitar around the fire. Were you prepared enough for that show? Did you feel prepared? Were you guys ready to play?
It was all right, I think. I've watched some video footage, I think one or two years back from that show.
Does it exist online?
No. No, it's like on a tape somewhere at my place. But I think for my age, I was 13, I think. I was quite happy with how it sounded.
I love that. At what point did the saxophone come into your life?
Very late. Actually, I've only been playing it for 2 years now. So, yeah, it's something I had it at the back of my head for a long time. I always loved the instrument since I'm also like a big jazz fusion guy. And so saxophone was like a natural choice for me to start. And actually, when I got my house that I live in now, I built a little studio that you can see behind. And that was the first time where I felt like confident to make loud noises in a loud instrument like saxophone, and I decided, yeah, perfect timing to start.
How horrible was it at first?
I must say it was mostly fun, because I've been playing the guitar for 17 years now. And so with the saxophone, I could really enjoy playing like just a simple melody and stuff like that.
Okay.
So perhaps it was horrible to listen to, but it was like fun. Having fun with like super easy stuff, playing a simple melody, a video game melody, whatever. Just having fun.
What would be the hardest thing starting the saxophone? What's the biggest thing that you have to, like basically like when it comes to a guitar player, the hardest thing that you have to get through is to build up the calluses on your fingers is probably the biggest obstacle for anyone that's learning guitar. What would be that equivalent to learning saxophone?
Yeah, I think you have some kind of aches in the mouth as well because of the mouthpiece and stuff like that. So that takes some time.
Okay.
And you can really feel like your facial muscles getting really tired and you have to really work on that. But apart from that, I think it was pretty easy because you don't feel pain in the fingers like on the guitar and stuff like that. So
that's very cool. We'll come back to saxophone in a bit, but I want to talk about The Impassable Horizon that came out back in June 25th via Metal Blade Records. Massive record, killer record. I listened to it again this morning. It was just so damn good. Progressive, catchy, heavy, really, really very excellent. I loved it. How did you feel about dropping a record during a pandemic, though, where you couldn't really promote it the way that you would have if there wasn't a pandemic?
Yeah, actually, we were lucky enough because we managed to play a release show in our hometown
for a
lot of our friends and fans. So that was something. And after that, we did a live stream show and still two festivals in September and October. So we didn't have nothing planned. But apart from that, I think we tried our best to make like video content and stuff like that because we weren't able to do a tour like we did with the last record and stuff like that. So we didn't want to wait longer for it to drop. So we just had to go for it. And I think it went out pretty well. Again, we tried our best to deal with the situation. And
I really think that like by the time June of 2021 came around, the world had sort of like accepted and realized that this is the state of the world. I think like the first, I'm thinking of like bands like Testament, Black Dahlia Murder, they all dropped records right in like March 2020. And I think that a lot of records were forgotten because of the state of the world, and people were just so in a panic frenzy that they didn't really enjoy albums the way that they did later on in the pandemic. So I think that you guys were lucky there.
Yeah, I think still these records that were released like in the very early days of the pandemic, I think people had a lot of time to listen to music in these days. So maybe that's something, I don't know. It's hard to say.
That's true. Plus you guys are writing new material, you were saying already. So I guess you guys were just like, we got to get this out. We can't just sit on this record for another year when you're already composing the next record.
Yeah, definitely. And we want to keep our rhythm of one record every 2 years. So I think this had to be released, and we're lucky that we did it.
One record every 2 years. What's the mindset behind that?
Well, I think in modern days, you have to remain active and keep releasing songs. And that's a tough goal, I think. But for now, it has worked since the beginning. And the next one, I think, will still be out in 2 years from the previous one.
Wow.
We'll see how that continues.
That's very ambitious. And your music is not, it's not square. It's not simple. So you guys must work hard all the time.
Yeah,
with touring too. In an ideal situation, you guys would be touring as well. So how do you fit the time in, or what is the work ethic that has to go into putting an album out every 2 years?
Well, yeah, we spend a lot of time working on the band, working on our instruments, and that's made easier because every single one of us in the band is a music teacher. We teach our instruments, so basically we are always in contact with the guitar, drums, and stuff like that. And that definitely helps to also arrange a schedule like we want it. Because, for example, I'm an independent teacher, so I can basically do my lessons whenever I want and take time off for tours, for writing stuff, or recording. And I think that's what makes it easier. But we are basically doing music full time, so.
That is absolutely true, and that's very cool. At what point did you start teaching guitar to people?
Actually, I started teaching some friends of mine and some people at school when I was 14, some stuff like that.
Really?
I wasn't really good, and it was just like one or...
But you were better than everyone else.
Yeah, but yeah, that's how I got a hand on it. And after high school, I went to a music college for a year called Music Academy International in France. And that was a year only. And after that, I started teaching like full time, or at least looking for students to teach full time.
What is the moment, or I have a few questions about teaching. What is the hardest thing teaching people guitar? What is some of the biggest obstacles to get?
I think you have to understand how everybody's mind works, because everybody understands differently. Everybody has different strengths, different weaknesses, and you have to find the best way to teach them something. And I find it most difficult with people, like children mostly, that don't really know why they are there, basically. The parents send them, and that's hard. Apart from that, usually when people know what they want to play on the guitar, it's cool.
I could imagine so. At what point, or has it happened, that your students just become too good for you?
I don't think it has happened yet. I have some pretty talented students, some of which were playing like Fractal Universe tunes and stuff like that. So that's a lot of fun. But I don't think I've ever come to the situation where I thought, yeah, this one is too good for me.
I've helped you, you know, like a grasshopper, you have surpassed me. You must move out of the dojo type.
No, but it sometimes can feel a little bit scary when someone walks in and already plays like super good, and you're like, what can I teach him? But then you realize there's still stuff you can do, stuff he doesn't know, or an approach you can give him, something different. I think there's always some benefit by taking lessons with someone, even if he's not like a lot better than you are.
But you also seem like someone that's also trying to learn all the time.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really passionate about music theory and harmony, stuff like that. And I'm constantly playing music, like saxophone, guitar, vocals. It's always a part of my day. So I'm always curious to learn
music. Like,
stuff.
Yeah, let's just start playing saxophone.
Yeah.
Who does that? You do that. I think that's so cool. Back to the record. You didn't really get to do it. You do have a cool tour coming up in the fall with Evergrey. But if you could pick a tour, like a perfect package where you're in control, you can pick all the bands. I'm thinking of like a 4-band package, including yourself. So you have to choose 3 bands that would help put Fractal Universe in front of the perfect crowd, so that when people walk out of that show at the end of the night, they are now Fractal Universe fans.
That's tough. Because I don't know if these bands would fit together on the bill.
Cult of Lunum does eclectic tour packages, and I love that.
I think one band would be Opeth, because it's really one of my favorite bands, especially in later years. And I think they kind of have the same, especially in their prog metal, prog death metal days, the same vibe, like mixing very soft with very heavy parts, and that's something we love to do as well.
But sounding like the same band, I think that's so, so important.
Yeah.
I say it all the time on the podcast. There's all these bands, and I'm not going to name them, but it sounds like they're flipping a switch, and we're like, oh, we're the clean band now. Oh, and now we're the heavy band. But I feel like you guys really have an identity in both.
Thank you. So Opeth would be like a dream, I think. Then maybe a band like Gojira would be a very good fit as well, because I think they really helped the French metal scene overall to get more noticed and stuff like that. And apart from that, I think we toured with Obscura. That was one of our big goals already. Like one of the bands I was absolutely into when they released Cosmogenesis and Omnivium. So that was a dream come true. And maybe that would be the fourth man on the package doing another tour with them.
That would be actually a really cool tour. That would be eclectic, but yet it all fits together nicely. I think it'd be massive. Opeth, Gojira, Obscura, Fractal Universe. Love it.
But there are so many others that we could pick, and yeah.
That is a question that I like to throw at people, especially since it's been out since June. Is there something about The Impassable Horizon that you would love to change? If you can go back in time and change something about the record, what would it be?
I don't know. Actually, I'm still pretty happy with most of it. I think like the compositions, the production turned out great. The recording process was really good. So I don't think I've had enough time to really get over it and think of things we would like to change. Really tough question. just being able to tour more, to release it in a different context, you know, stuff like that. But still, we are pretty happy with the context we released it in.
Is there a funny recording story? Something, a silly thing that happened while you were recording the record that you could share?
Actually, the recording was pretty boring because for the first time we recorded it at home.
Home
studio. So it was just not very exciting. I tracked the guitars and vocals at my place and I was all alone while doing it, so I don't remember
really
anything funny.
See, that I would have trouble. I record with Chris Donaldson, who's Cryptopsy's guitarist, so, and I have been recording with him since probably 2007, 2005, probably. And I would have a hard time tracking vocals by myself. I like to have someone else be there to like give me the, oh yeah, that was good. For some reason, I need that. Like, I know when it's bad, but to really have someone give me the seal of approval, especially when it's Chris's, I know that that was the take. So how did you go about finding the takes for yourself?
Yeah, actually, for me, it's quite the opposite. I tend to get quite nervous, especially for vocals, when people are around in the studio. And so I think it really liberated me, and I was able to do as many takes as I wanted and to take the time to listen back to it. And since we were in the pandemic when we recorded, I had more time than we'd usually have. And I think I really liked it that way.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's very freeing. Good for you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
You mentioned that you guys started a Twitch channel to connect with your fans. Talk to me about that. Were you doing Twitch before, or did you really just start it during the pandemic as a way to connect with your fans?
Exactly. Actually, we were looking for ways to connect with people. We came home from the tour of Obscura, and 2 weeks later, we were in complete lockdown in France. So that was a pretty rough transition. And that's when we decided, yeah, let's try something on Twitch. And it's been really fun because we have been playing like some Fractal Universe sets all at our own places. Like also I've been doing some impro sessions on the saxophone and the guitar. And lately we've been starting to invite some guests over to our channel. We've had Sam Valen from Caligula's Horse, Max Fuzz from Exist, and we're going to have a new one in a couple of weeks as well. So that's pretty cool as well, I think. It's very diverse what we try to offer, and I think people enjoyed it, and we did as well.
It is one like silver lining of the pandemic happening at this time when technology is up to this level that we can do that. Because if we turn back, if the pandemic happened during the 90s, it would have really killed the music scene a lot more. It would have been next to impossible to connect with your fans the way that you guys have via Twitch and the way that I'm doing it through the podcast. It would be very difficult.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, yeah, as we discussed earlier, these records that came out during the pandemic also helped a lot of people. I remember listening to the new records, the new Black Dahlia Murder when it dropped. And yeah, I think that was still important for people to have music and to have these live stream shows coming up. And all these podcasts that started emerging like you're doing. And I think that's, people needed that, and the artists need that as well. And I think everybody found something in it.
That's one lucky thing that happened. Back to the saxophone. We're seeing a lot more of it Do you think that there is a place? Obviously you do. But defend your statement, because there is some on your record. Saxophone and metal. We're seeing a lot more of it. Is there a place for saxophone and metal? What do you think about saxophone and metal?
Yeah, to me, it's an instrument that can sound really heavy. Like, you can put a lot of energy into it because it all comes from your breath. And if you are really pushing hard, the sound that comes out of the instrument can be pretty intense. And I think that fits metal pretty well. And
absolutely. Bruce Lamont does it very well.
And so I think that's the first reason. Besides that, I think since we are doing like a proggier side of metal, it's been really common basically to try to find new sonorities and stuff like that. And saxophone is just one way to achieve that. And
I think it's cool that it's you that does the saxophone. Yeah, yeah. And it's not like a guy that you brought in.
Because we had some guests on the previous records, and that's also how we realized that saxophone could sound really great on the record. We had Jörgen Munkeby from Shining that played on the first record.
Oh, shit.
And Hugo's Sick. Father, or guitar player's father, Jean-Marc Florimond, who played on the second record. And so, saxophone fitted our music, and when I started playing it, it was just natural for me to add it on the album more and to add it on live shows as well.
I think that's super cool. Do you think that you're eventually going to end up being lumped together with Rivers of Nile?
Oh, well, that would be an amazing band to tour with, definitely. And
I'm surprised you didn't say that before.
Yeah, absolutely. I love their record, We're Also Know My Name, and really like the last one as well. But yeah, that's definitely one band that manages to add the saxophone pretty well and smoothly into the music. It's not forced at all.
You could do like a sax tour. You get Yakuza, Rivers of Nile, and Fractal Universe, and it could be like sax across, you know, something, some pun with sax in it.
Yeah, did you see them with the saxophone player live?
I watched videos of them, but I toured with them, but it was before they released Where Owls Know My Name. Yeah.
Okay, because I saw them, I was lucky enough to see them on the tour where they had the saxophone player around it. It was really great because that really brought something new to the table and was something pretty unique.
Sax across the globe. I'm still trying to think of this pun. I'm sorry. You mentioned a bunch of stuff, and I'm assuming that's what you did. Something that was taken, we spoke about it right at the beginning. We're not being able to perform. It's such an important part of our lives. I'm very lucky that I have the podcast right before I sit down here. I'm worried if we're going to connect. Am I prepared enough? I get the same little butterflies in my stomach that I would typically get before jumping on stage. So this is how I've been filling the void of performing. How have you been filling the void?
Yeah, kind of with the Twitch, actually, in the beginning. It's exactly like you described. I have the same butterflies in the stomach, like... when going on stage, and I liked that. I was really pretending that this was a real show with a crowd like in front of me, and that was fun.
It's hard to do these Twitch or live stream. I haven't done one, but I can only imagine. I've spoken to a bunch of people that have, to try to get that same energy across when it's not directly coming back to you. You're just like looking into a camera, basically, and trying to connect with people when there's nothing really coming back aside from just messages coming up in that stream.
I think it's really a good exercise, and we tend to do that also when we rehearse for live shows, like doing crowd interactions and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So kind of the same stuff. But yeah, you never completely get the feeling of a live show, but it's really a good exercise to learn how to pretend the best.
I guess one day we'll get so big that the lights and the stage will be so big that we won't necessarily see the crowd anyways.
Yeah.
Right?
No, but that happens sometimes when you have a lot of front lights, you can barely see like the first two rows of the crowd, even in a small venue. So.
That's okay. Everyone else is just standing there like this. But I love doing beer collabs. I love making collabs. I've released probably 35 of them so far since I started the podcast. If you could create a beer for Fractal Universe, what style would it be and what would you call it?
What style? Well, I would go something like an IPA. As I said, this is basically what I would have loved to drink. What would call it? Fractale? Something like that? That sounds cheesy, but...
That's not a bad idea. No, but beer names have to be a little bit cheesy. I like that. and then you could sell glassware where it's the shape of a saxophone.
Pretty inconvenient, but would be cool.
And they have to drink from the mouthpiece. I'll take 15%. But Vince, we're already at the end. One last question. Classic Vox and Hops wrap-up question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you're very busy teaching. You're very busy continually learning new music. You're recording. You're writing. You're on Twitch. You're a very, very busy musician. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone, especially if you enjoy too many of those 10% Belgian beers. What is your hangover cure?
Actually, trying to drink a lot of water, even during the evening, even when I drink a lot. My number one rule is 2 glasses of water for every glass of alcohol, and that helps with the hangover.
Okay. 100%.
But then I usually try to, maybe I go running on the day after just to get some of this poison out of my body. That usually helps, but it's not always easy.
The motivate, yes, so you have to get out the door is the issue.
Yeah.
But I have heard that. I've heard the water to beer. I've heard the running before. The problem with the water to beer is you spend the whole night in the bathroom.
Yeah, but I can deal with that if that helps with the hangover stuff. That's definitely one small sacrifice.
Wise words from Vince. Vince, thank you so much for taking the time hanging out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about craft beer. Everyone, go and listen to The Impassable Horizon. You will not be disappointed. Vince, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, did I ever have a great, great conversation connecting with Vince. I love speaking to musicians, and Vince is absolutely that. He is someone that loves to learn, is always striving to learn more, to expand his musical reach. And I think that is super admirable. And it shows because Fractal Universe is a very diverse band and is continually evolving. So massive cheers to Vince, and thank you so much for hanging out with me. I had an absolute blast. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive 2 emails a month letting you know exactly what has been going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see all the info for any episodes which I dropped recently. You will also get to see all the reviews that the Vox and Hops album review crew have done. You will get to see which bands Jerry Monk, the Metal Architect himself, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on both Apple Music and Spotify, and you'll get to hear about any new projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. There's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, I'd hate for you to miss a single thing, so sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a glorious weekend. I'll be back next week with one massive episode on Tuesday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room.
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.